How's everybody doing?
I'm okay, Chairperson.
Good. Mr. Mkize.
Morning, Chairperson. Mamandika.
Molo, Toto, Kujani.
I'm good.
That's nice.
Can I see your face?
Yeah, I must see everybody's face, yes. I see that they are
here.
I'm just checking if the ministers have joined us. I have not seen them yet.
Honourable Glita, I'm here representing the Minister of Justice on the justice matters. I'm not sure if I think...
I see you now. Now that you're talking, I can see you.
I'm calling for that.
Yes, DM. You're welcome. Do we have OE Department of COFTA? I can see that the Deputy Minister is in. Welcome, honorable members, our Deputy Minister, Deputy Minister for COFTA, Pak Tau, and Deputy Minister for Justice and Correctional Services, Honorable Jeffrey, you are welcome. I do not have the list of the DGs, that if DGs are with us, they are as well very much welcome. And the officials of both departments, very good morning. I'm sure our agenda, you have received it, all honorable members. We have all items in our agenda. One, we are dealing with the undertakings of the Department of COFTA. We only have one. And I'm sure you are aware what is it about, because we've given all honorable members the undertaking. And then we have a Department of Justice with four undertakings. And our third item of the agenda would be the consideration of minutes. And thereafter, we have eight. For the purpose of not wasting time, can we then go straight to our... let me first deal with apologies. I have one apology from honorable members. It's Honorable Mfayela. Unfortunately, today is attending to a doctor's appointment. He has written an apology to that effect. He is the only one from our honorable members. I can check from the side of the ministers, because for a fact, I know it's a cabinet day today. Maybe that's the reason we are having deputy ministers instead of a minister. Can I allow the deputy ministers, if they do have apologies, because we didn't have, and I don't have anything written from my side.
Chair, I don't know if I can start from the minister. And I assume it would apply to other ministers. It's cabinet today.
Yes.
So that is why he's apologizing, why I've been asked to come and respond to the undertakings he made. Okay. But I would suggest that in future there's an attempt to find a suitable time, because obviously during cabinet, ministers have to attend cabinet, which sits on a Wednesday. Thanks, Chair. Okay.
I'm sure it will be the same to the Department of Culture. I must say it's unfortunate for this committee. The day that is set aside in terms of the programming for the committee is on Wednesday. And Wednesday in the morning. So we don't, we will not have any way of changing the day. Maybe what we can do, we can negotiate time with the ministers. When you receive our correspondence, I would appreciate that if they may indicate their availability and time and availability, so that you are able to juggle around in terms of time to our day, which is Wednesday. So that's the only way we can deal with that. Thank you very much, Honorable Jim. Can we then, without wasting time, go straight to the Minister of Culture, Honorable Park Tau?
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson, Deputy Minister Jeffrey, Honorable Members, and colleagues here present. Our focus is on, in terms of undertakings, is on the presentation we've made with regards to the implementation or the development of a smart city framework as per the medium-term strategic framework. The medium-term strategic framework indicated that the Department of Cooperative Governance and Traditional Affairs should develop a framework for the implementation of smart cities that would enable municipalities to work from as we seek to implement smart cities. In this regard, we have been working on the finalization of the framework and interacting with sister departments in the process of finalizing this framework. The presentation, with your indulgence, Honorable Chairperson, will be done by Mr. Siyanda Nkahle, who is part of the team that has been working on the development of the Smart City Framework. And if I may, at this point, ask Siyanda Nkahle to take us through the presentation. Thanks, Honorable Chair.
Okay. Over to you, Siyanda.
Thank you very much, DMs, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, colleagues. I thought the presentation would be loaded from my colleagues on the other side. I haven't seen it, Chair. My colleagues were going to load it on.
We do have the copies, but it's nice to see it as well.
Thank you, Chair. Now I think it's now on the screen. I hope all members can see it.
Yes, we can.
Okay. Chair, if I can say, is that a... And try, it's not really now. Light show. Can we make it a slide show, colleagues? Okay. Chair, if I can start, I will say... Thank you. Chair, we'll address the issue of smart cities by giving a background and also come up with a smart city framework for South Africa. We'll also then get into undertaking towards the finalization of the smart cities framework. Chair, as a background, as we all can recall, that the President in his State of Nation Address in 2019, in February 2020, he expressed his dream of a smart city, which has subsequently ignited discussion around the notion of smart cities within the South African context. The President indicated clearly that technology will be the foundation upon which the future South Africa will be built, and that the outcome of the strategy will be smart city. In this context, a smart city is where in investments in human and social capital and traditional and modern communication infrastructure towards sustainable economic development and high quality of life with prudent management of national resources. If you can wear your sense, smart cities have to become centers of innovation and creativity and must respond to everyday challenges such as congestion, crime, poverty, and poor service delivery. Smart cities are transformational in nature and is aimed at achieving an enhanced quality of life for citizens and deliver tangible benefits at all spheres of government while judiciously liberating resources. They must be society-centric and address local challenges. With advancement in technology, the present model of services provision is becoming obsolete in certain parts of the country. Any intervention to address the challenge of poverty, inequality, and unemployment must therefore be embraced. To keep abreast with global and local innovations, a smart cities framework is required to guide the adoption and implementation of smart city strategies by municipalities. The smart cities framework must define the core values, principles, and priorities that will underpin the smart cities vision in relation to the state, society, environment, and economy. It will also define how municipalities will govern and harness available resources and technology for the benefit of society. It will also address critical urban management issues such as sustainable development, citizen freedom and digital privacy, cyber security and city surveillance, data protection and governance, digital inclusion and entrepreneurship, and equality amongst others matters. The SCF will be aimed at governing the country towards a single common vision and mission for smart cities to ensure that all planning is aligned to unified vision. The SCF will be informed by the realities in municipalities though, the availability of resources and commitment by other organs of state to provide the necessary resources. We have also discovered that numerous stakeholders are conducting work around smart cities, but in a fragmented and silo manner. This no doubt results in duplicated efforts and inefficient use of resources. There must therefore be effective coordination and streamline to successfully roll out the framework and to ensure that there are complementary strategies to implement it at a local level. Coming to smart cities framework, we envision the role of the national government, that it will be to enable, guide, support, and coordinate and accelerate smart cities initiative. This is encapsulated as follows, Chair. If you look right at the left-hand side, the DECOP will have to develop smart cities guidance and policy, then establish and support partnerships, facilitate information sharing, support research and development, and then finally monitor implementation, which should be about progress and outcomes of the SCF. Then the department is developing the SCF in cooperation with the CSIR. We foresee that the SCF would motivate municipalities to embrace appropriate smart cities initiative, ensure that a clear and consistent approach to smart cities is adopted, provide a set of principles to guide decision-making and inform actions, show how multiple factors interact to influence an outcome, advise on quality assurance and risk management practices where appropriate though, establish accountabilities and delegated authorities for individuals and groups, and finally identify actions and interventions more likely to lead to desired results. Below are transferred to the SCF success, which should be avoided at a cost. First one is inappropriate or misinformed interventions. That is, smart cities ideas implemented without due consideration of local context and priorities. Secondly, vested corporate interest. Technology should not be seen as a starting point, but rather be seen as an enabler, as indicated in the National Development Plan. The poor understanding of the complexities of cities is also a problem, that is systems of systems. And finally, and also especially on protection of Personal Information Act, this is also the issue that is at threat. Coming to the undertakings, towards the finalization of the SPF chair. The DCOP has committed to the following deliverables in the short term. First, we develop a draft SPF that should be happening by the middle of November 2020, and take consultations until December 2020. That will include all stakeholders who will be involved now in looking into the draft SPF. We'll then revise the draft SPF during January 2021, whereby the inputs from all stakeholders will then be incorporated or be reviewed to enhance the SCF. And then finally, then we'll finalize the SCF before April 2021. But what is important is that the SCF will ensure that it must be inclusive. That is, it should be for all of society, that it must use the ICT as an enabler, information communication technology as an enabler, rather than a driver, is informed by local conditions, which is important, is co-produced by the community, and embraces partnerships and innovation. In conclusion, Chair, we recommend that the committee take note of the contents of the presentation. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Let's see if the Minister is having anything to add.
Now, I think the presentation covers all the issues, Honourable Chair, so we can engage on the basis of the presentation.
Thank you very much, Deputy Minister. Can I then allow the Honourable Members to engage with the presentation from the Department? Yes, Honorable Adobo.
All right, thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Firstly, let us welcome the presentation and the input made in terms of the intentions of the department in respect of this smart city framework. Firstly, I want to say that this initiative on the side of the department, but at the same time share with the department our intention as the cluster of...
Sorry, can I ask Kaya Somteza to please mute? Kaya Somteza.
Okay, thanks.
You are stepping back.
Yes, I was saying that, Chair, we as a committee have seized the opportunity that was presented by the President on the Smart City concept. And we were this year in April planning to visit Brazil, China, and one African country, that is Ghana, in respect of learning more and better process establishing new cities in the current century. This is quite important because as members of parliament, we need to know how cities are established and how countries go about establishing cities so that when this process that the department is presenting to us is started, we are in full swing, we understand what is expected of it, and as a committee of parliament, we impact quite positively in the whole process in monitoring the department and in playing our oversight function. We were actually doing that, we were inconvenienced by the pandemic, by COVID-19 pandemic. That is why we couldn't visit those particular countries. I think this process is very much important, and thank you, Chair, for bringing this forward. It shows how we work together as a committee to ensure that we complement our work together. Thank you very much for that. Now, what the department presented as a framework, which I also call a process plan, it says this is what we are going to do to ensure that at the end of the day, we have a plan, we have a framework, we have a way in which this is how cities are going to be developed. My proposal to the department is that this is a big project that must be undertaken meticulously, and it is an opportunity that presents itself to the department to look as a, to the country as a whole. We know that our country has got so many imbalances, inequalities in so many respects, and this is an opportunity to balance our country. And in that sense, it is going to be quite important that the engagement that the department is anticipating must be elaborate, must be broad, must be intense, must include all the relevant stakeholders who must make an impact in this particular process. My only concern, and I want the Deputy Minister and the department to answer to that and allay my concern, I feel that we are very slow. The President announced this last year in June, on the 19th of June, if I remember very well. We are now in November. And for me, to develop this framework during the pandemic, it was the opportunity to just develop the way in which you want to unfold this, in which you want to undertake this. If I put it to you, what is your response to that when I say to you, you are a bit slow? We need to expedite this. For me, the smart city concept framework has got positive spin-offs for the country. How we want to develop our country, we need to do this. We need to look at this. And this will have an immense contribution in the economic development and social development of our country. And if I say to you, you are very slow, you need to expedite it. What is your comment on that? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Dodovu. I do not see any other hands from the participants. If there are no hands, maybe let me take it where Honorable Dodovu left off to say I'm as well in agreement with what you are saying, in appreciation of what has been presented to us. Because by now we were expecting to see how far are you in terms of implementation rather than still receiving the framework. And also what we would like to know from our side is how much has been set aside for this particular project in your adjustment budget, if we could get that. You have interacted with the Office of the Treasury, and this is what has been set aside for this particular project of Smart City. And another one from my side, presumably the Smart City framework is meant to address the influx migration from rural areas for job seekers into an urban area. In addition to KZN, Gauteng, possible the Western Cape, are there any other provinces that have been earmarked for this kind of a development? Because we are eager to know, in terms of your planning, have you identified any specific other provinces rather than the ones that I have indicated? And again, what I would like to know from the department, has the department developed system to deal with capacity of the possible population increase? You know, we would like to know that if the department has taken that into consideration. I heard that you have also talked a lot about the ICT technology, which is meant to be the key for the smart city. But what I would like for you, have you set aside a budget for ICT maintenance, such as IT infrastructure and technology? If yes, you would like to know how much have you set aside for those. So that would be my comments, Chair. That would be my comments to you, Minister.
Thank you, Chair. Thanks. Greetings to everybody in the meeting. Chair, everybody is a victim of the pandemic that we are coming from and we are still in, the COVID-19. When this issue of the smart city was raised, it was before this pandemic. Now the president has given us a new plan, economic revival plan. I just want to know from the department whether are they covered in the new plan from the president while them focusing only in the smart cities, because this pandemic also gave us an opportunity to ensure that whatever that we do from now, we start on the 5th industrial going forward. I hope our new smart cities will be covering those elements. This issue of network and others, it will be issue of the past. The issue of parking and other stuff, it will be issue of the past. So that's why I'm asking them if they are in line with the president economically, the new development that has been announced soon, so that we know that we don't have a smart city that is sitting in another corner and the other bigger plan of developing the country is also on sitting on the other plan. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Ntetwa. Any other speaker that I do not see?
Can I make another contribution?
Yes, Honorable Todovu, you are allowed.
Yes, sir. I must also add that when the president mooted this idea for the first time, he mentioned the fact that the president of China and both Minister Zuma, Dlamini Zuma, and Minister Pandor were going to be the champions to drive this. I want to check in what extent are they involved in this particular process. For me, that is quite important. Now, that's a way of doing a basic rudimentary analysis of how to establish a new city. One of the greatest conditions is that it must be a city where there is water. Must be a city, because without water, availability of water as a resource, you go nowhere, because anything that we do requires water. Where you want to locate the city, it must be where water availability is very, very much okay. And that must take care of the issues of the environment and so on. I just want to check with the department, are you involving such organizations or departments? Are you anticipating to bring them on board in order to give their own views? Like, for example, the point that Honorable Mthethwa is raising, that these cities that are established in the past, they didn't take care of certain elements. For example, traffic congestion. One of the good elements of establishing a new city is that make sure that you limit your papers. It becomes a paperless city. It becomes a high-tech city. But you also reduce transportation. That's a way of establishing that city and use other mechanisms. Reduce or limit the number of cars and use other modes of transport to those particular cities. My question is linked to what I asked earlier on. Is it planning to engage other stakeholders? Question is that are they playing, and how will they engage other players and contributors in making this smart city framework tight and fair? Okay, thank you very much, sir.
Thank you very much. If there are no other hands, I will then allow the Deputy Minister to respond to the question.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members. I'll comment on some, and I'm sure the colleagues from the department will also comment on other details. Firstly, I think to make the observation that we do need to resolve the problem of nomenclature. So we have a problem where there are two initiatives currently underway in government dealing with smart cities, and we call it the same thing. And sometimes we tend to cause a bit of confusion. Let me explain what I'm saying. The first relates to the initiative to develop a new city or even new cities at some point, but let's focus on the one new city that is underpinned by, amongst others, smart technologies, which has been defined as a smart city. That's a new city initiative. And sites have been identified, but it's not the project that we are currently talking about. So that's why I'm saying we need to differentiate between that project of a new city, and I think Honorable Totov is emphasizing on that as a separate project that's been undertaken from the current initiative that we're reporting on, which is the Smart City Framework. And the Smart Cities Framework is intended to be a framework for all cities, whether new or old, to convert and adapt to technologies that are smart, that would enable them to grow at the back of technologies and optimize opportunities for local economies, for municipal efficiency, governance, but also for accessibility to digital access to communities in cities across the country. So the framework that we're developing and the process that we have presented here today is on the latter. It has to do with an overall framework that would guide all cities to be able to implement smart city initiatives. And this could range from digital infrastructure or network infrastructure related to smart cities, ranging from broadband, telecoms, and so on, to the installation of smart meter reading solutions in municipalities and other technologies that could be applicable to the municipal environment. So I thought it's important that we try and separate the two, but I accept that part of the problem comes from government to the extent that sometimes when we speak, we don't always find a way of differentiating between the two. Honorable Totovu asked the question, have we been slow in the development of the framework? Just to say that post the adoption of the MTSF, we included the Smart City Framework, which is captured in the medium-term strategic framework. We included that in the annual performance plan for the current financial year. So the president did announce in June last year, but the inclusion of the program in the annual performance plan was in the current financial year, and it is our intention to conclude within the current financial year so that we enable implementation. So I'm really separating or differentiating between the point of announcement to the point at which we started the implementation of the process of developing a smart city framework. From our point of view, at least internally in government, there's been extensive consultation. I have no doubt that we need to extend that consultation to other stakeholders, but our idea was that let's have a draft framework as the basis on which we would engage other stakeholders in the process of finalizing the framework on smart cities for the country. Which also deals with the points that the Honorable Ntadi Chairperson has raised with regards to how we differentiate between the framework and implementation. And I thought I have clarified what actually the framework is intended to do. And amongst others, it is not intended that COCTA as a department would be responsible for all aspects of implementation. So we're not going to develop extensive skills and capability as a department in areas that are best done by our colleagues that are responsible for digital technologies and communications. So from that point of view, we see them as critical partners. So to the extent that you need broadband, to the extent that you need application of technologies, to the extent that you need specific disciplines in the development of the framework and its implementation, would need to source capacity from those who are best placed and who have developed the necessary capabilities in government. In fact, I can confirm that in the development of this framework itself, we've seen the CSIR as a critical partner, and they are the technical partners in the process of developing the framework. But also, as I said, our colleagues in communications and digital technologies have been very close to the process of the development of the framework. Out of the framework would define an implementation plan, which would be resourced by the appropriate agencies and municipalities to the extent that it needs implementation. If there are gaps identified, we then need to present to government what alternative means of financing some of these issues could be to stimulate the development of smart cities throughout the country. The intention is, beyond the pilot size earmark, is to ensure that we have smart cities, Honorable Chairperson, in all the provinces of the country. So it is the intention that all provinces would be covered. Would smart cities constitute part of the economic recovery plan? Certainly they would. Have resources been directly allocated to us for the implementation? No, but as indicated, it is intended that it is those departments that are responsible and have the capacity and skills to do that would then be allocated the resources for purposes of implementation. But certainly, issues of digital infrastructure constitute part of the economic recovery plan. Are there elements of the economic recovery plan that we are responsible for? As a department, there are, and these are led in particular by the Municipal Infrastructure Support Agent. Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. I thought I've covered the bulk of the issues. I'm sure Mr. Siyanda Nkasi would want to comment on one or two issues, and any of the other colleagues that are here present in the department. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. It's stuck. Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Chair. I don't know. It just got stuck. Thank you, Chair. We've got a network problem. Thank you, Chair. It's network.
We can hear you, Siyanda, so if you can proceed.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Chair. No, I think the DM has covered a lot of ground, and maybe there's only one area that maybe one will need to respond to about the issues of budget. I think, Chair, as we explained and when we made the presentation, at this stage we are looking at the framework, which is said that we are envisaging to finalize it before April. And then the next phase of this then will be implementation, where I think the issues of how the budgets and in terms of implementation will be covered when we get to the phase. I think that's only one thing I could pick up that needed response. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. What I would like to know from the minister as the last point from me, is it possible that we get the framework you are referring to, the draft framework, I heard you saying draft, as the committee?
Honorable Chairperson, at this point it is in draft form. Can we interact with your office at what point we would be able to present something that would be at least at the level at which we are able to present to the committee? Can I request that we interact with your office on that matter?
No, it's okay. Thank you very much, TM. We'll wait for your response on that so that we are able to follow up on matters that are contained in your framework. Is there any other question from the honourable members? None. If there are none, then that takes care of the presentation by the Deputy Minister, Pak Tau. And I will then thank very much the department for coming and updating us in terms of the Smart City implementation program. And I'm sure we'll, from time to time, Deputy Minister, interact with the department to see how far are you in terms of analyzing the framework and as well the time frame for start the implementation. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
We can excuse the DM and the team.
Thank you very much.
Can I then go to the DM for Justice and Correctional Services, Honorable Jefferson?
Thanks, Honorable Chair.
Maybe before you start, can I disturb you before you start? I must say, Honorable DM, we are very unhappy with what the department has done to us. It's the first time that we receive a presentation in the morning of the meeting, to be exact, past 8. So I do not know what went wrong, because the correspondence was delivered to you on the 23rd of October. At least you expected the department to respect the committee and give it time to read the presentation so that we are able to interact with the presentation. I thought I must first start on that first note so that it doesn't repeat itself. Over to you, Deputy Minister.
Thanks, Chair. No, I'm very sorry about that. I think there were some problems from the Parliamentary Liaison Officer relating to being able to get the document through on email. But my apology, and we will make sure it doesn't happen again. Chairperson, I'm also joined by Deputy Minister Hulumisa. There are three undertakings relating to justice. There are three relating to justice and then one relating to correctional services. So if I can deal with the three relating to the Department of Justice. I'm joined by the Acting Director General, Ms. Kale Pile, and other officials. The first one is regards to, and I don't know if the document can be put on. There we are. Thanks. If we can go to page three, The question on information technology infrastructure, if I can ask Mr. Nicholas Munyai and Mr. Batile Matibe to go through the presentation. Thanks, Chair. Nicholas and Batile.
Thanks, MP and members of Parliament. I think the first question is in relation to the undertaking made in August 2019. And our response is as follows. The ICT infrastructure as a priority in case integration projects.
Can Martin Erasmus help us and mute? Martin Erasmus,
okay.
Mute your phone. Honorable Enoch Mthethwa, mute as well. Thank you.
May we proceed?
Yes.
Yes, we're just in the beginning to say the ICT infrastructure is a priority in the case integration project. The IJS operates with 8 connected departments that are connected through the IJS hub for the electronic exchange of criminal justice system information between SAPS in this particular one, NPA, and DOJ, and amongst other things that have been done in ensuring that there is a modernization of the criminal justice system was one, equipping the NPA prosecutors with 4,850 laptops. This again enables access to integrated systems. It gives them an opportunity to access the electronic case management system and the integration with the integrated case management system of Department of Justice. And again, the part of what I did in the NPA is to also ensure that we deliver the ICT capacity to support them with critical area of prosecution services. And as an essential prerequisite to system utilization and adoption within CJS, this includes ICT infrastructure, the ICT infrastructure projects, and application maintenance that we're doing with NPA. Can you go to the next slide, please? Again, very critical is the issue of child justice. The DSG, Social Development, is one of the 8 departments that are IJS member departments. And then for child justice to be effective, all government departments, of course, need to be involved and to be united and operating in a cohesive manner. In the child justice integration, there's a child justice integration, which is which the IJS, together with DSG, has developed. IJS and DSG completed the enhancement of DSG mobile probation case management application. In simple terms, it allows the recent electronic integration with SAPS and the new mobile application, which then allows the DSG supervisor to receive electronic notification as soon as a child has been apprehended by the SAPS. And this is very critical. It ensures that there is a prompt allocation of probation officer to assess the child. Again, we have connecting around 1,000 probation case managers, DSG, national, and of course we work with provinces as well. And IJS completed the procurement of around 1,000 tablets with cellular network connectivity to enable each and every probation officer to be connected and to be able to capture their assessment results. This is very critical, and the use of low-cost mobile devices has proven successful in the environment. We are expecting again further rollout of additional 2,000 mobile tablets to continue to support social workers who are also supporting the victim empowerment program as well as child protection. Again, I think the minister has also reported previously in Parliament around the OCJ, Office of Chief Justice Court Online Project. This is very critical, and its importance was well felt during the COVID-19 pandemic. It was on the 18th of July, the key milestone was reached through undertaking the first fully paperless case trial simulation. All parties in the court were able to use their laptops and mobile tablets to access digital version of case material. So this was the pilot was done in Johannesburg High Court and Pretoria High Court. And of course, we are also assisting in assessing the infrastructure readiness of other high courts, including the Supreme Court of Appeal, so that we can have a national rollout. We can now move out of Gauteng and go to other provinces. And like I said in the beginning, during the COVID-19 pandemic, the solution benefits were proven and accelerating the deployment of necessary infrastructure. I mean, all the cases, some of the cases in the High Court, civil matters that were dealt with, were through case line. This is court online. But there's still another module that we are soon to be rolling out, the first part of case management of Microsoft Dynamics. Again, because integrated person management is at the heartbeat of the IJS program. During 2019-2020, IJS worked with the Department of Home Affairs for the upgrade of the Harness Legacy application. Because the ability to uniquely identify a person within CJS is essential and made possible by an IJS unique person identifier. So this is very critical. And again, we will be in the next session when we are called in Parliament to speak about the project that has now been started, integrated person management from the Department of Police. The next. What we have done even under COVID-19 pandemic, especially at level 5, 4, and 3, we have identified the projects that are very critical. We call them COVID-19 legacy projects. And then one was the Court Audiovisual Solution Project, which we're accelerating delivery of CAPS for visual trial, remand, and interpreting and deployed in 9 regional courts, while the current audiovisual remand solution process is expanded to 18 additional sites. Again, under COVID, we identify that this case must also be connected to practice at the Tutuzela Care Center and the use of this technology by Department of Correctional Services to enable virtual offender visits. And again, you would have seen that under COVID, the exchange of cash, especially for bail, had to be also reduced. You saw in the DCS, they actually cancelled the manual payment of bail and stopped people from paying bail in the DCS. But then the solution is that. We are implementing an electronic bail payment system. This is very significant, and in the end of the first quarter, the first phase of the EFT will be going live end of the first quarter. Very critical, it has various phases. And I think in a nutshell, this is where we are. I think this was the last slide. Matt even want to just add one or two.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, DM, and members of the committee. The overall view that we have taken is COVID-19, the pandemic, has actually created an opportunity for us to really focus on the public-facing processes, and we've looked at ways that out of it, we could learn on how to optimize and use technology to ensure that our services become clear and easily accessible.
Can you report? So overall, the whole
is a parliamentary channel. Who also wants them. But now, there's a question about that answer.
Also, meaning that.
And when you answer.
But all the
Marion Johnson, could you please mute?
Thank you, Chair. I think that all the solutions. Can I continue?
Yes, I'm listening. Yes, please.
Yeah. So the difference in how we approached this was all the services and the modernization initiatives were not focused on the member departments of the criminal justice system, but we looked at the members of the or the citizens of the country to say, at the point they enter the system, can we be able to have a digital tracking and tracing of how we interact with them? And up until they exit the system. That also allows us to ensure that they get the best service. But key to that, we can start measuring how we perform and have opportunities to improve. And that's basically how we looked at this. Thank you, Chair and members of the committee.
Thank you very much. Any additions from both M?
Chair, no, that's one. I don't know if you want questions on it or whether we can go to the next undertaking and then do all the undertakings.
Yes, we take all the undertakings.
Okay. Yes. Chair, then thank you. The next one I will do, which is, as you've got on the screen, the minister saying there's ongoing discussion between the Department, that's of Justice, and the National Treasury, which is not yet concluded, which is aimed to resolve these challenges of budgetary constraints of the NPA. As and when the discussions have been concluded through the budgetary processes of government, we will be able to make any informed communication to members here and the public. In August 2019, the minister indicated that there's ongoing discussion between the department and the National Treasury. He further indicated that when they've been concluded, he'd make, as I've read out in the statement. In the meantime, South Africa and the world has been hit by COVID-19, which, amongst other matters, has caused major economic stress and challenges. However, we're all committed to support, especially the NPA, in terms of its budgetary and resource requirements to ensure that the law takes its course and that justice is both done and seen to be done. Additional funding, of 106.8 million was allocated to the NPA during the 2019 adjusted estimates of national expenditure and 1.247 billion of the medium term expenditure framework period during the 2020 MTEF process in October 2019. And based on that initial additional funding, NPA began its process to rebuild the organization by filling vacancies, revitalizing the aspirant prosecutors training program, and providing much needed ITC equipment to prosecutors. Unfortunately, and I have to indicate through the new budget baseline reductions amounting to 1.046 billion were introduced and implemented by National Treasury during the 2021 MTEF process, leaving the NPA in the same financial crisis as before the National Director of Public Prosecution's journey in advocating additional funding for the NPA. The Minister has been informed that while the NPA can absorb the budget baseline reduction in respect to the current financial year, that's 2020 and 2020-21, and the 21-22 financial year, the proposed budget reductions in respect of the outer MTEF years will severely impact on the NPA's ability to deliver on its mandate, as the NPA will not be in a position to pay the newly appointed staff. They will furthermore be unable to recruit to fill vacancies and to build the capacity required to effectively prosecute. And on the next slide, you've got the projected compensation of employees costing in line with the 2021 MTF budget allocation. So you'd see that the variance, particularly for the 2023-24 financial year, is quite huge. Given that the NPA has already exhausted all initiatives to curb expenditure and save costs, no additional measures can be implemented. And consideration may then have to be given down to closing specialized units. Without maintaining its skills base, the prosecution of cases in court will be severely impacted, causing delays in prosecution. The COVID-19 pandemic has caused the current economic crisis that has been compounded by corrupt activities during the COVID-19 procurement. Prosecution of these matters must ensue. Furthermore, the benefits derived from corrupt activities must be returned to state coffers, and the NPA has a legal mandate to execute this task. That's through the assets forfeiture unit. The lack of funding will cripple the NPA's ability to address corruption and recovery of the assets. The DG of the National Treasury was once again formally urged on the 18th of September 2020 not to consider any additional budget baseline reductions and to reconsider the current position relating to the outer years. They responded a few days later that the concerns raised by the NPA have been noted and that it will be processed as part of the MTF planning process, which is currently underway. National Treasury has also confirmed their support for the work that the NPA does to realize government's vision as contained in the National Development Plan. Chair, that's on the second undertaking. If I can just ask if the acting DG or the acting CFO, Mr. Nhlanhla Mthembu, want to add anything?
Okay, Nhlanhla Mthembu. Any addition from your side? Nothing.
Yes, can you hear? You can't play.
Chair, I just wanted to indicate that I think the
you are very far. We can't hear you properly. Can you get closer to your mic?
I wanted to indicate that the DM has covered me adequately. I have nothing to add at this stage.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Chair. If I can move to then the third one and the last one for justice, and that relates to a question that was put to the minister that two ministers were slapped with cost orders because they didn't implement a court judgment. And then with regarding the last two heads of the NPA, that's the Nasana judgment, the court ordered an amendment, and what has the department done about that? Chair, the response there, I mean, the minister had said the department is in the process of putting in place those measures. The Judicial Matters Amendment Bill was introduced in October last year in Parliament. In response to that court judgment, amongst other things, it dealt with Section 12 of the NPA Act, dealing with the term of office of the NDPP and the Deputy National Directors of Public Prosecutions and the extension of office of these office bearers, basically that they couldn't be extended. The Constitutional Court decision in Corruption Watch versus the President declared Section 12.4 and Section 12.6 of the NPA Act unconstitutional. The bill has been, as you'd know, approved by both Houses of Parliament and was sent for assent to the President on the 3rd of September. And maybe just in closure, both the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development and the NPA are working extremely hard to ensure that the criminal justice system is strengthened. The criminal justice system, and I take matters of justice and the law extremely seriously, and we undertake to work together with this Honourable House, as well as the members of the public and private spheres, to ensure that justice is not only done, but seems to be done. Chair, that's the three matters for the Department of Justice. The fourth matter would be correctional services, which Deputy Minister Olumiso will deal with. I don't know if you want discussion on these matters, Chair, and then do corrections, or whether you want to...
No, we'll take all of them.
All of them, okay. So then it will be over to Deputy Minister Olumiso.
Chair?
Oh, thank you, Sir President. And good morning.
Good morning.
What I thought I would do was to present a summary of our response and in the hope that the actual presentation was delivered to the to your office, Chairperson, on time for the members to have it. Once I've done it, if there are questions, then we will be able to refer to the bigger presentation. Honorable Chairperson and members of the Select Committee on Petitions and Executive Undertakings, we thank you for affording us the opportunity to share with you the visions and plans of the Department of Correctional Services on skills development for the inmates who are in our care and custody. We wish to express our appreciation for reminding us of the undertakings we made before this August House that we would attempt to share with you information on progress regarding our work in this regard. The Minister of Justice and Correctional Services would have preferred to have come in person to report back to you on those undertakings. However, due to cabinet commitments, which coincided with the date chosen by the committee, he has requested me to come in his stead and to convey his sincere apologies for his absence. Some of you will recall the words he uttered to you when he said, and I quote, "We are currently looking at reviewing the skills program in terms of our budget because we are of the view that every inmate should be able to go through this. So we are looking at whether we can make it compulsory for every inmate to receive some kind of skills education or vocational training." Now, the mission and vision of the skills development program of the Department of Correctional Services is to provide market-related skills to offenders that will equip them with the needs-based occupational skills and vocational education and training in order to facilitate their rehabilitation and social reintegration. This will also serve to ensure that we contribute to the government program of action, which seeks to create a skilled and capable workforce. The Constitution of the Republic of South Africa states that the South African democratic state and common citizenship are founded on the values of human dignity, equality, and the advancement of rights and freedom. Human rights, that is. As part of building a humane and caring society, the right to basic education and training is a building block in the establishment of equality and the advancement of human rights. In 2005, the Department published a white paper on corrections, which outlines the principles informing the core function of the Department vis-a-vis offenders, that is, to correct the offending behavior in a secure, safe, and humane environment in order to facilitate the achievement of rehabilitation and avoidance of recidivism. Chapter 4 of this white paper further explains on rehabilitation as being the process that combines the correction of the offending behavior, human development, and promotion of social responsibility and values. In addition, the Correctional Services Act compels us to provide access to a range of programs and activities, including skills training. Due to the demand of industry and work opportunities outside the prison walls, our programs are linked to the various quality assurance bodies such as SAQWA, UMALUSI, and Quality Council for Trades and Occupation to ensure they meet the set national standards. The offenders are skilled in competencies that the department itself can utilize, such as doing maintenance and repair work, plumbing, renovation, baking bread for inmate consumption, providing milk, meat, vegetables, fruit, and so on. Recently, we built a recreational hall in George Management Area using offender labor. As part of an integrated approach, we motivate offenders to attend at least adult education programs to level 4 or grade 9, as this is the basic requirement for entry to accredited skills programs. This is also linked to Minister Ronald Lamola's commitment made during the budget vote speech in October 2019 when he said, and I quote, "We will continue to play a pivotal role in the national strategy on poverty eradication through our management of 21 farms and 115 small gardens that are being used for self-sufficiency and to provide work opportunities. Our production workshops, which specialize in cabinet making, wood machining, upholstery, furniture polishing, welding, plate metal work, fitting and tanning, spray painting and powder coating, fine writing, jig tool and dye making, garment making, confectionery and so on, continue to provide work opportunities for offenders with the objective of skills utilization and development in order to enhance offenders' employability and self-sustenance upon their release," close quote. Mindful of the scarcity of jobs for law-abiding citizens, we are also providing skills to offenders to become entrepreneurs in order to be able to start their own businesses and even provide employment to other parolees and community members. Our social reintegration branch is able to follow some of these success stories. Ideally, we would like the person to see every simple inmate being skilled and better off than before being incarcerated. However, our reality is that we cannot involve remand detainees, firstly due to the risk involved, but also because of the uncertainty of the length of their incarceration. Accredited or formal skills training requires a minimum number of notional hours. The cost for some courses per offender is as much as 16,000 rand per person. We can therefore not include offenders with very short sentences, as we need to guarantee that they will be able to complete all the requirements. We also exclude maximum member offenders due to the risk they pose and the security classification. Every training facility and workplace has a limited capacity in relation to the available floor space. We are thus limited in the number of offenders who can be allowed in our facilities at any given time. Coupled with that is the current social distancing requirement that has seen us reducing the numbers of people allowed in any space. On need-based programs, rehabilitation, participation in skills development is based on the needs of offenders, which follows the comprehensive assessment and the development of an individual's correctional sentence plan. Female offenders are prioritized, including in skills like bricklaying and plastering, besides the beauty industry like saloon work and nail polishing. Basic minimum entry requirements are possession of a South African identity document or a valid passport for foreign nationals, the ability to read and write, ability to read English as the medium of instruction, having passed standard 7 or grade 9, that is adult AET level 4. Now, critical strategic elements required to achieve ideal offender development are accreditation of offender training facilities and workplaces to increase offender participation, alignment of the TVET college curriculum with local workplace, maintenance of proper quality management and information management systems and processes, ensuring proper implementation of skills development policies and procedures, alignment of the organizational structure, recruitment and filling vacant posts of skills development at all the training sites, optimization of skills development training facilities and resourcing of training facilities, enhanced partnerships with internal and external stakeholders, continuous motivation for the increase of voted funds in order to train more offenders. Voted funds are augmented by the NSF funding, currently 52 million rand over 3 years for the training of 5,400 offenders. We apply annually for funding for the sitters. Now, Chairperson, the department collaborates with various stakeholders to fund training of offenders and thus contributing to personal development and rehabilitation of offenders. We have signed an implementation protocol with the National Skills Fund under the Department of Higher Education and Training for training of 5,480 offenders on various vocational and occupational programs for the 2018-2019 up to 2021-2022 financial year. During the first year of implementation, 1,719 offenders were trained on various vocational and occupational skills programs. The SITA funded the training of 276 offenders on vocational and occupational skills programs. Services SITA funded the training of 44 female offenders on hairdressing at level 3 at Johannesburg Management Area. Mercita funded the training of 157 offenders in KZN. In preparation for the insourcing of the nutrition services, the Department of Correctional Services successfully trained 352 offenders on the accredited chef assistant and baking skills programs at the previously 8 outsourced management areas. DCS managed to save on costs by training 12 offenders at Pietermaritzburg Management Area in the textiles workshop on industrial sewing machine repairs. This accredited skills program contributed towards the return on investment as 25 industrial sewing machines were repaired during the training. DCS collaborated with the Department of Environmental Affairs, Forestry and Fisheries, and the City of Banyan Municipality on the waste management pilot project for offenders management area as a contribution to Chapter 5 of the National Development Plan.
Honorable Minister, I just want to ask Mr. William, you are disturbing our meeting. Please switch off your mic. Mute your mic, please. William,
please.
You are still on.
I'm trying to get it off.
Okay, then please keep quiet. We can continue, Honorable Deputy Minister.
Thank you, Mr. President. I was saying, DCS collaborated with the Department of Environmental Affairs, Forest and Fisheries, and the City of Swane Municipality on the waste management pilot project for offenders at Hosi Mampuru, the second management area, as a contribution to Chapter 5 of the National Development Plan. The pilot project has successfully trained 25 offenders on accredited waste management short skills program. The City of Swane Municipality donated 24,240 liters bins to Hosi Mampuru, the second management area, towards the project. The department, through the partnership established with DHET, secured bursaries for 16 educators towards an advanced diploma in adult and community education and training teaching at NQF Level 7 at Durban University of Technology. DHET trained DCS technical educators and skills development practitioners on the administration and management of TVET college examinations. DHET, Umalusi, and the Quality Council for Trades and Occupations conducted TVET examination monitoring visits at registered DCS TVET examination centers to ensure compliance to national TVET examination standards. In partnership with the Tshwane North Technical Vocational and Training College, the department has contributed to the community outreach project through the implementation of learnerships for parolees, community members and offenders. Offenders, parolees and community members were trained on agriculture, in plant production, on cabinet making, panel beating, welding and early childhood development at the Zondero Water Management Area. DCS has also procured 20 computers for COSMO and 15 for Kirkwood Management Areas to ensure compliance with implementation of TVET college programs as prescribed by the Department of Higher Education and Training. A total of 9,364 offenders participated in TVET college programs, and 14,717 skill training programs for the 2019-2020 financial year. DCS has increased offender participation from 17,534 in 2018-2019 financial year to 24,081 in the 2019-2020 financial year. The participation increased by 6,581 in the 2019-2020 financial year because of partnerships with external partners like DHET, NSF, SACITA, and other CITAs. The department trained 88 technical educators and skills development practitioners as assessors and occupational education training and development practitioners towards compliance and accreditation of offender training facilities and workplaces. Offenders incarcerated in the correctional centers that do not have resources such as training facilities and workplaces can be transferred to centers with such resources. DCS, much like the rest of the South African society, is faced with an ever-decreasing budget and will not be able to involve all 150,000 inmates in skills training. However, inmates are also involved in other programs and services, for example, formal education, sports, arts and culture, spiritual care, as well as therapeutic services provided by social workers and psychologists. Some of the programs continue while offenders are serving the remainder of their sentences under correction, community correction. Madam Chair, I stop there, and if there are questions, Deputy Commissioner Blackies is available to take them. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Deputy Minister. And then I will allow the honourable members to interact with both presentations. There was this one department. Can I see him? Honorable Sheikh, I see your hand is up. Honorable Dodo will be the next. And Honorable Kenny Mutamai. Can I plead with all of you, honorable members, that you ask the questions that are relevant to the undertakings that were made by the both ministers. So let us not ask questions that are outside that, because we'll be confusing the whole meeting. Can you then start, Honorable Sheikh?
Yeah, so thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson, and I hope I'll be able to speak to you to what you've indicated. Chair, my first question relates to the integrated criminal justice system. Well, this has been a project that has been ongoing for quite some time by the department, and I think in terms of the presentation that was made, we do see quite a lot of progress in a number of areas. But I think, as was also indicated in the presentation, one thing that COVID-19 has also indicated to us what is the importance of ICT systems, and the department has indicated that they also have taken in this opportunity. There are 8 connected partners which are involved in terms of the integrated criminal system. And while I know I indicated that there's been slow progress on it, I think some of the challenges related to was the coordination between these partners, but also the issue of budget. I don't know if the department could also give us an indication in terms of has the situation actually improved, both in terms of coordination with the partners as well as with the the issue of budgets, and I would imagine it will be budgets across all the eight partners. Chair, I think my second, it's not a question, but I think that we should be very concerned with the budgetary constraints that the National Prosecuting Authority faces. While I understand that the minister, Deputy Minister, has indicated that these concerns will only be addressed in the MTAF budget, but I think we should raise this as a concern, because I think if the MTA gets to the point of closing down specialized units, and as well as them being able to maintain their skills based chair, obviously I think the NPA would be in crisis. So I just wanted to raise that concern. Chair, let me stop there. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Honorable Dodobu?
Yes, thank you, Chair. Firstly, let me join Honorable Shane by commending the two presentations and really say that this is quite informative from the department in respect of issues of justice and issues of correctional services. This is very, very good, and I appreciate how the department has presented itself to us. It clearly shows that it took its time to prepare these submissions, and they take your committee very, very serious, Chair, and I commend them for that. Just on the second point, the issue that Honorable Sheikh is raising about the integrated criminal justice system, for me, it sounds like an old record. We have, as much as I can remember, been talking about the need to do that, the importance of doing that, and that will help us to address the issues of crime and lately of corruption in our land. But it seems as if the department is moving with a snail's pace. And then for me, this is worrisome. My question is, why don't you pilot it? You better pilot it in one province, in one district, put all of your resources there, coordinate it, and check whether it works or what, and what lessons can we learn from that pilot. For me, maybe this could work, but we've been talking about this, but the problem ensues. I'm saying this because one of the issues that the Deputy Minister addressed was the issue of the individuals in our court system. I can tell you now, I know of many cases where possible offenders were on the basis of lack of audiovisual, was not of, or the audiovisual was not properly registered, recorded, and the judge or the chief magistrate can hear the or the voices quite well in that respect. And a lot of people were acquitted because of that. I'm happy that the department is taking this serious, but for me, this is a matter that they must address as a matter of urgency. Last year, Chair, this committee visited the Polokwane High Court, and I hear that the minister is saying that there is a need to pay attention to ensure that we maximize IT in our courts. But what we have seen in the High Court of Polokwane leaves much to be desired. We were totally not happy about the report that we received in terms of the building that is not that old. It was dilapidating, it was deteriorating because of poor workmanship. The IT system was also problematic in that. And for me, if a new court like the Polokwane High Court or the Limpopo High Court, whatever that is, find itself in that situation when it's a new court, for me, that is quite problematic. And I really, really want the department to look at this kind of matters so that we are serious and we are seen to be spending the monies of the state quite prudently. On the issue of the NPA, I think we must express this point that we need to find ways in which we support the NPA. We need to strengthen the work of the NPA. We need to prioritize the NPA in terms of the budget, because clearly what the NPA is doing and is supposed to do, Honorable Chair, is to ensure that they prioritize their work in terms of prosecution, especially in the wake of crime and corruption that is ravaging our country. I want to check with the Deputy Minister, because one of the biggest problems about a year ago related to the lack of vacancies, especially in the prosecutorial area. Have they managed to fill up that? What is the situation? What is the update? Because we need competent prosecutors to go and do the work. Where I come from in the Northwest, when I engage the NPA about its work, especially with regard to corruption in the municipalities, I'm told that for the whole province, there are only two prosecutors that are working on this, and their work is stretched out. And in some other instances, they end up giving people bail, or they end up, you know, releasing people on what they call provisional withdrawal of charges, because the state is not ready to prosecute people in that way. It is because of they lack the necessary human resource and the capacity. And for me, you can't say you want to deal with corruption when you do not strengthen this area of work. And for me, this is what needs to be attended to. That's the chair. I'm from a province which is under Section 100 of the Constitution. It is under administration. It is bad, and the government had to be collapsed. And my view is that I will not be happy when the basis of that collapse of the department or of the government was on the basis of corruption. And we are told that there are about 50 cases that are in the hands of the NPA, and the NPA is constrained because of budget and other related matters to prosecute those who are involved. It can't help the province to be stable. Lastly, Chair, let me just talk a bit on what Honorable Chief Holomisa said. Look, just listening to what you are saying, I sometimes, as he was presenting and the department, I was getting the feeling that it seems as if he's presenting about something else and not the offenders. I think as a matter of principle and as a matter of fact, Honorable Chair, we must understand that these are offenders that we are killing. These are people who have offended the society. These are the people who have committed crime in our society. And we must not, and I'm not saying that, Chair, but I'm saying we must not create any impression whatsoever that to live in a prison in South Africa when you are arrested, prosecuted, and sentenced is better. You live much better because you have good resources, you have good medical care, you even have training of the magnitude that is presented here. And my view is that impression must never be created at all, that it would seem that it is better to be in prison than when you are outside. Because the people who are unemployed, who are disadvantaged, must also be eligible and be in the position to get the benefits that these people who are criminal offenders, who have committed crime, are getting. And I'm not saying this as a way of saying that don't do it, but I'm saying that we must bear in mind that whatever that we do, we must not advantage them at the expense of ordinary people. And I don't know. I can't talk with an authority on this subject because I don't know it well. But I'm saying we need to find a model, I don't know where, that will make us feel and make the society feel that whatever correction that we are doing with these offenders, we are not advantaging them. They do not get all the benefits. They do not watch Hollywood. They do not watch movies when they are in prison. They are sentenced because they offended the society. And I don't have a clear-cut solution, but I want to ask the department that this is something that the department must look at, so that out there the perception must not be created that it's better to be in prison than to be outside, because all these advantages, including the skills development advantages, they will get better when they are in prison, Honorable Chair. Thank you very much, and sorry for taking as a time. And I thought perhaps I must tackle all the questions which were on the table once and for all. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. Honorable Mtamai.
Thanks so much, Chairperson. I can look at Chairperson. When you talk about Wabutaki to the minister, particularly Holumis, Kitabela, the way Abuanga Dengare, only the skills, Kuchangani, because when you send somebody to prison, you want that person after Changani must be changed. Because I said, because that's an alumni reintegration to society. At the more community, yeah. Elemoto, all right. But my problem and my concern is one. There are prisons like Boksburg Correctional Service, Johannesburg Correctional Service, Local Correctional Center, Sonor Wazer, and Peter Marisburg. How many of the skills you when you get on those prisons? There are few of image Baba Sebesa, Baba Chutan skills. When I read the section, more than 1,000 yabatu imo high service haba ithutin nix ntho ba etsa ba etsa eten le then ba gona le the courses tsantsi nga di bua sentle tsa building carpentry upholstery welding and so on mari do tse this palwa ke ntho e one e re ya magador ha di bua tswa di tswa changane ndi tsena mo ntle be ba re you have a criminal record re ka so hi there's one after some times they will go back to prison. King 12 years alone, not about correctional service. Or a left head, something, Aaron, or a car about someone, that is skills about Tangazon, especially Luna about correctional service. Or Reba Taure, really fair who look is at the seal. Or about Olefa who are hiding, who look is at the colo, who penta. Go renovate di trata tse di moteng ga dikolo ke ntho e leng gore mo lona minister le ikemiseditse go etsa gore dišhankana tsa rona di se ka tlala. For example, now and when we go to prison, we can go simple here in Boksburg prison. We will find Boksburg prison is overcrowded after go releasewa more than 19,000 ya di-image. You can't believe gore San City is overcrowded. Ona le batho ba ba robala mo tlase mo ba sa robale mo dipeteng. Le tsa eng minister ya gore di botswa this dinetse loko o nne Changane, because Changane gwa jiwa gwa robalwa a gona mosebetsi. Ke ntho e ka etsang gore di botswa tsena di tsena mo ntle di tole mosebetsi ka di skills tse di baruti ba rutileng tsone. Ke a leboga Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honorable Ntamai. I do not see any other hand. I also have only two questions to the Department of Justice. What I would like to know, are the factors contributed to the slow pace of implementation of the IJS program? If the minister can take us through that. And then and the other point from them, you know, this issue of closing the specialized unit of the NPA, it's seriously worrying. And how I wish if those specialized units are closed, what then happens within the department? I would like to know, what I would like to know from them, what would really would it not contribute negatively to the department to close this specialized unit? And also you spoke of the department that sometimes the sections are unable of the NPA to pay the staff. And then what is the mitigating factor to that? Because if the staff is not paid, it then becomes a problem. There can be a strike on any other thing. So I would like the minister to further clarify that. From the Department of Correctional Services, I think I must commend them for the good work that they are doing. I know that it may sound as if you are doing too much for those that have offended the communities. But we know that it doesn't make them any, it doesn't make them less to the rights that we have as South African citizenry. They also have those rights that South African citizens have. So the work is good, but it's good that you, in your presentation, you were able to touch on some provinces that are doing work. How I wish you could give us the information that will help us in each province. What is it that is happening? I know that we didn't ask for that information right now, but the department later on must submit to our office such information so that when we go back to our constituencies, we are able to go to those correctional services and do our oversight work. I will then give to Honorable Mthethwa. I see that his hand is up.
Thank you, Chair. I didn't want to speak after you. I've been keep on punching this hand up. Thanks okay. For... my chair is that is directed to the correctional services that... I hear all this program, which is a very good program that are doing for the inmate. May I ask if is there any study commission anywhere in Africa or in the Euro for in terms of these benefits or in terms of this program, let me call it program, that the department is engaging on? And what are the advantage and the disadvantage of it? Thank you very much, Chair.
Yes, the last one for me, for the correctional services, can the department provide the committee with disaggregated data on the number of inmates who have successfully exited the program and who were placed in the vocational training? So we'd like to also to have that kind of information, Honorable Deputy Minister. Can I then give back to the Deputy Minister to respond to questions? We can start with Justice as they were the first to present.
Thank you, Chair. If I can ask Mr. Munyai or Mr. Batile to just deal with the integrated criminal justice system questions. That was from Honourable Sheikh and Honourable Dodogo, and then I will add and deal with the rest. Thanks.
Okay. So what do you say?
Thanks, DM and the chairperson. Yes. Thanks. The first question related to IJS was asked by the Honourable Sheikh Shahid around the coordination, whether there's a better coordination of the IJS program and also issues relating to budget. Part of what we are doing now, firstly, let me state that IJS used to be under subs, and in 2016 it was then moved to justice, including its hub was then moved to the DOJ, so it's under the DOJ. But of course, the coordination, part of what we are doing to improve the coordination now is through the governance process. Currently we're doing were reviewing the current governance model, coordination is quite problematic. In what we are proposing in the governance, in the new governance framework, which we have taken it to various JCPS cluster forums and will be going to cabinet for approval of such, is to ensure that outside only having the IJS board, which then is represented by the business owner and also the GITO, the IT head, we also proposed in the governance framework that there must be a structure on top of the IJS board, which will be called IJS Implementation Committee. And that structure will be the structure of DGs, which will then have to sit quarterly, because currently there is little accountability that is imposed on these member departments. Because remember, IJS is not a single system. It's multiple systems, and these systems are then connected to the hub for the purposes of information exchange. Now, these member departments, for instance, 8 of them, they literally account on IJS projects. So the new framework will then enforce them to also include IJS-related projects in their APPs, and that their DGs, together with the CEO, was CETA also a major contributor of the slow pace of the IJS program. So that framework, that new governance framework, is very, very critical. So the IJS board will be the implementation committee, because it must implement, ensure that programs move with the necessary speed it deserves. But there must be an accounting forum, which is that of the DGs, and it will be chaired by the DG of Justice and Constitutional Development. When time permits, some other time, we'll be able to take you through that governance framework. The 8 departments that are there, that's what I'm saying, we're running a multi-departmental project, 49 of those. Home Affairs, Police, Department of Justice, Legal Aid Board, Office of Chief Justice, NPA, Social Development and Correctional Services. Those are member departments. And the budget is allocated according to the requirements that are generated in those member departments. We run what we call integrated planning sessions, where we are able to go to each and every member department and look at what they will require for the modernization and integration of the justice system. We do that. So it's allocated to member departments. The new governance model seeks to ensure that there is accountability and more visibility and monitoring of the program going forward. So it's very critical. It's critical. Again, when you raise the issue of this, the other challenge that we face, Honorable Dodovu asked why the program is moving very slow. The issue that I'm raising around the governance, but we're ensuring that things start. There's one issue. There are two critical things that we do. One is relating to case management. In terms of case management, if you look across all member departments, there's been a lot done. There are systems that have been developed for case management purposes. Where we've been lacking was in the person management. Well, person management is very, very critical for the lifeblood of the IJS, because it then allows the person to be tracked from the location, the custody status of a person through the entire CGS. So that is very critical. So what is happening is that now, as we speak, that project, which has been delayed for several times, maybe for more than 8 years, integrated person management, and also it has to do with CETA issues that have also contributed to the delays around that. But that project has started since we arrived. We ensure that project starts from police, and we'll be working with police directly to ensure the delivery of this project. The other thing is that the achievement of IJS, Honorable Dodov, it's mainly accrued to member departments, and this is what we are changing by building a strong communication and change management unit within the IGS. For instance, recently in Parliament, a lot was said good things about the legal aid board, but little is said about the ELA system, which is an IJS project. I'm just giving an example. And recently, again, just to quickly inform members of the committee that SASA, which is under, of course, under social development, recently approached us to leverage on the IJS PIVA services to combat fraud. And I'm happy to report that during COVID, SASA was using PIVA. And so the beneficiary of social grant were then verified using biometric fingerprints against the Home Affairs National Population Register. And then IJS continued to support this integration with SASA because it assisted a lot to combat a fraud. You would have seen, but when things are reported, one would say, no, SASA has done this. But safe to say that no one says that this is the work of the IJS. They use the IJS app to ensure that they combat PIVA services, to combat fraud during the COVID-19 pandemic. It was very good. So I'm saying the slow pace, of course, it's caused by a multiplicity of things. One is that, especially in police, I mean, there have been issues with CETA. We've invited CETA to the IJS board, and where all member departments were worried that projects are delayed precisely because of lack of resources from CETA. We've even now established what we call the war room with CETA to ensure that IJS-related projects are fast-tracked in that manner. So, again, on the issue of what Honorable Dodogo raised around why are you not piloting it to district and provinces? I mean, really, if you look at the probation management I've been speaking to, remember, social development works differently. The provinces does not necessarily account to the national office. They account to their respective premiers. That's why I'm saying what we're doing in that DSD mobile application for child support processes. We're also working directly with provinces. And we've worked with Northwest, I think Western Cape. I think we'll be able to provide you with a list of that. So the program itself is national, but we also go to provinces where there is a need to do so in ensuring that we deliver. On the issues of AVR, audiovisual remand, remember, so far, AVR was deployed to 47 sites, and for this financial year, it will then be extended to 18 sites. We want to deploy it to as many sites as possible, but so far where we are, it's only those sites. And again, one critical thing, I know that Batile will also add, is that during COVID-19, we've been using different virtual platforms. Others would use Zoom, WebEx, Teams, and so forth. But again, you have seen that our environment, especially in the criminal justice system, we've been very vulnerable to cyber attacks. And therefore, it's critical. There's been an undertaking by state security to do an assessment and verify all the virtual platforms that are using, because we need to use a secured and approved virtual platform that by the state security, or else we will also be facing a lot of hacking, cyber attacks from hackers all the time. So I don't want to zoom in into what has transpired. I'm sure you might be aware of some of this. So, I think your question, Chair, around the issues that I'm raising, also on what the Honorable Dodogo was raising around what is the slow pace in implementing. But it's safe to say that the governance framework, once approved by cabinet, we will start seeing a lot of things moving, and also the issue of CETA. Sometimes these things of CETA might also require other intervention. At our level, we might not, but we continue to have engagement with them. We have established war room to ensure that there's delivery around that. The IPM is started. It's a key question, because in the criminal justice system, the value chain starts when the person is arrested. Therefore, SAPS and that IPM is the heartbeat of the IGS problem. That's why we are putting all the hands on the deck to ensure that project moves with the necessary speed. Thanks, Chair. I think Martina would want to add one or two things.
Okay. Thank you, Chair, and members of the committee. I think over and above the formal governance structures that we're putting in place, from an implementation and service delivery or a delivery point, what we've done is we are now having a single view of all projects, because now we're running them as a portfolio of projects, not individual projects. So the interrelations and the impacts across the different projects in the value chain, and we get early triggers where we can see one delay that can lead to a domino effect of delays. So we're not only waiting for the formalization of the accountability side. From the program itself, we're changing the approach in terms of how we measure progress. That's the first thing. Secondly, we also are very cognizant of the fact, and this again is as a result of COVID-19. We looked at capacity that was deployed in the infrastructure, and that impacts the quality of service. So we've now gone back and said, we look at an integrated view. Once we deploy the technology, it has to run in an infrastructure that's capable to handle the quality, the capacity and the quality of service. So as a result, and this is in line with what Honorable Dodovu mentioned about the Polokwane High Court. So we no longer look at it as a single site. We look at it as a single site that requires 1, 2, 3 so that we can ensure the quality of service. And that's how we are approaching it, over and above that. And with a single view of the different projects within the portfolio, we can start looking at the slow pace of implementation, but unlock the slowness that we are responsible for, while at an accountability level, the new framework will ensure that can be managed properly. So it's a two-pronged approach. It's no longer separated according to the different layers. Thank you, Chair and members of the committee.
Chair, can I then just continue on the ones to justice? There were points that the Honourable Dodovu raised relating to the Polokwane High Court and the state of the Polokwane High Court. Let me just say that that court was built on donated land, as far as I understand. And the problem is, on that land, there is a spring. So the court has to have a pumping system to pump the water out from the lower levels of the court. There was also a problem with the handover of the court, where contractors or the public works, I think it was, did not want to take responsibility for the court because the contractors, the builders, had not fixed all the snags. I'm not entirely sure offhand how that was resolved. The whole matter is the subject of an SIU investigation in terms of a proclamation that the president issued. The problem with the courts is that it's public works who build them. In this case, they had an arrangement, or there was an arrangement with the Independent Development Trust for the building of that court. We can see there are serious problems, and hopefully the SIU investigation into that court and a number of court buildings being built will uncover things. On Honourable Dodovu's point of people being acquitted because the magistrate evidence was virtual and the magistrate couldn't hear, I would really like it if Honorable de Dorvo afterwards could give me the details of those cases, because I'm not aware of that. There have been provisions in the Criminal Procedure Act for some time that evidence could be led virtually. It's up to the court to rule on it. But I'd really much, very much like the details of these cases where the magistrate couldn't hear and the accused was acquitted because of that. Then with the issue of the filling of vacancies, as I've indicated, I mean, the long and short of the minister's answer was the NPA got more money. With that money, they were then able to rehire or hire people, set up their aspirin prosecutor program, etc. I don't have the details of how many people, new people were employed or vacancies were filled. We can get that from them if you want. I know with the aspirin prosecutors program that the aspirin prosecutors wrote their exams, admission exams, recently. So, but we can give that detail. The problem for the NCA is then the further budget cuts that are coming that, as I've said, put them back more or less to where they were. They have informed us that they can absorb these cuts for the current financial year and the next financial year, which is 21-22. But that after that, there are going to be problems. And that is where the issue may come of being able to pay, Honorable Chair, your question, of being able to pay existing staff. So it's not a problem now. It won't be a problem in the next financial year, but it might be a problem in the third year. So nobody's not being paid now. But in the third year, and it may relate to the new staff that were taken on. And that also would relate to the specialized units. Obviously, it's going to be, they're there for a purpose. It would be a problem if they have to be closed. But that, again, as I understand it, is a thing for the, not this year, not next year, the year, the financial year after that. Chair, I think that's it from our side as justice, unless the acting DG wants to add anything, or Mr. Mtembu.
DG? DG, do you want to add anything? DG is no longer with us.
Chair, it would one. Let's take silence as being consent. Maybe if let's take silence as consent then.
Let's take it, yes, disappear. Can we then go to the next department?
Yeah, thank you very much, Shepherdson, once again. And also for the comments that have been made, encouraging us to do more of what you are doing. The concern of Honorable Dodovu is an understandable one, because it seems as if when we empower and capacitate lawbreakers, we are favoring them more than we should be doing, instead of addressing the concerns of those who are victims of their crimes. But our constitution is the one that guides us in what we are doing. The constitution tells us that these people continue to be human beings who have rights like everybody else. The fact of taking a person's liberty is a punishment in itself.
Mm-hmm.
By being incarcerated, you are being punished. Mm-hmm. Now, there's no reason for you to be punished further while you are inside. And we've taken a decision as government that we are not just the prison department, but the correctional services department. We aim to rehabilitate these lawbreakers to make them better and productive citizens so that they are not easily attracted to crime once they finish their prison terms. We want the opportunity that they have in our centers to be used in a positive manner to increase the number of people who have skills and educated in our communities. We know that in most instances, you find that these people come out with better skills than the victims, the families of the victims of their crime, if they have killed people. And that doesn't sit well with people. But before people are released, be it on parole, we make sure that there's dialogue between the victims and the offenders so that there's some understanding as to why it is that these people are getting the benefits that they are getting. We don't want them to come out worse individuals than they were before. You see, even with these rehabilitation programs that we provide, they continue to receive other training from other people, the other lawbreakers who are inside. Now, if we don't balance that by giving them more positive skills and leave them to the wiles of those who have taught them how to be better lawbreakers, then we are producing people who are going to be a problem to society once they come out at the end of the day. So we have that problem, therefore. We leave it, in fact, encourage other departments to do what they can to assist the victims of crime. But we, while we, on the other hand, do what we can in order to make them better citizens as they come out of our centers. So we are quite aware of the perception by some members of the public that we treat them better than we do the victims of their crimes. Mr. Motsamai, I think he was supporting me when he responded, when he made his comments, that you want to change the person who gets into our centers to be a better person than when he went into our center. I understood him, though I didn't follow properly everything that he said, but he was complaining about the fact of overcrowding in certain correctional centers, particularly in Boksburg and Johannesburg, correctional center called Sun City. He was wanted to know what it is that the department is doing to deal with overcrowding. Overcrowding is a perennial problem because criminals continue to be more in number, in terms of numbers, than the facilities that we have, the bed spaces that we have. The obvious solution would be if money was available in unlimited supply, would be building more prisons in order to incarcerate as many offenders as possible, but that is not about to happen because even the ones that are going to be opening, for instance, one in Amakwe, another one in Fani, they are not going to accommodate all the numbers of people that deserve to be incarcerated. But there's a judgment by the court to the effect that at least there shouldn't be more than 150% of capacity of prisoners in any center. So we always make sure that even if there's overcrowding, because anything that is beyond 100%, it means that there's overcrowding. But the limit, because the court has to be realistic, is 150 and less. It must not be more than 150, where we discover that there's a likelihood of that percentage being exceeded. Then we relocate our inmates to other centers, especially those who are not required to be going to court on a regular basis, to ensure that we comply with the decision of the court. Now, he also said something about the criminal record, which I understood him to be saying that the people who have criminal records are not easily employed. Yeah, that's a reality. If you have a criminal record, whether you have skills that have been acquired while you were in our correctional center, people tend to be negative towards you. So that's why we have a problem of embarking on an education campaign for the community to understand that it's important, it's in the interest of safer societies that we employ these people who have been given skills that have been given them with the resources of the state that should have been used to do something else. Now, if we're going to expand money training and giving people skills and giving them an education, only to find that that skill and that knowledge is not going to be used productively, then it's a waste of the resources of the state. So it's important that they be employed. We appeal to business and communities to accept them. We know that they cannot hide the fact that they have been to prison. They must disclose it, but there's no law that says a person who has a criminal record must not be employed. All you have to do is to consider his circumstances, his qualifications, like you would with everybody else, and decide accordingly. It's an unfair discrimination not to employ a person merely because that person has a criminal record, when he has shown that he has the capability and the qualifications to do the job that he's supposed to do. Then we agree that they must be used, if I understood Mr. Mzamai properly, they must be used, our inmates, to renovate schools and clinics and other public facilities. Until COVID-19 struck, we were busy doing that, using their labor and their skills to make sure that they become of use to the communities that they have wronged by performing such functions. The chairperson has, in addition to commending the good work that the department is doing, wanted to also emphasize the point I've been making, that we may appear to be doing more for the benefit of the lawbreakers than they deserve, but the reality is that that is what we have to do as the Department of Correctional Services. If we don't do that, then we'll be failing in carrying out the mandate that is required of us. Now, we will be very happy to provide you with the full information regarding all that we are doing in all of our correctional centers. I'm sure Mrs. Black is here. They will be in a position to give that undertaking as well, that we will provide you with information that is going to give you the picture of what you are doing in all of the facilities in our management areas. Similarly, with regard to the number of people that have been given skills and the type of skills that have been given to them through our rehabilitation program, that information we'll be happy to give. Again, I think regarding Honorable Mchatwa's question as to whether we have done any studies elsewhere to compare what we are doing here and what they are doing in other countries, be it in Africa or outside of Africa, to see if what you are doing is something that can be emulated elsewhere. I think Ms. Lykis had requested that she answer to that one. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honorable Deputy Minister. We can then go to Ms. Lykis.
Good day, Chairperson, members of the committee, and Deputy Minister and DCS officials. Thanks for the opportunity. Yes, indeed, we share the sentiments of the committee that DM also highlighted, that we do not want to be seen to be doing more for the offenders. As government, we need to strike this fine balance, that we show the law-abiding young people that it's not better to be in our facilities. And in addition to what Deputy Minister already outlined, I just want to add that as a department, we also to come and visit our facilities as part of crime prevention, working with the school. Not glamorous inside our correctional facilities. The one thing that is very important for a young person is their freedom. We want them to come into our facilities and see that That is the most important thing that has been taken away from people who broke the law. So that is part of our prevention. And then there was also a question about a project or a model where we can involve people from the community. In the presentation of the Deputy Minister, we referred to a project that we had at Zonnewater where we involved parolees and young people, law-abiding young people from the surrounding communities, to take part in a project. What we need to do as a department and that we are currently working on is to strengthen the partnerships to involve more community organizations and other government departments to be able to involve more young people to come and do their practical part of their courses, for instance, in agriculture, that they then be part of the training, the practical part that our offenders and parolees are going through. So we are working on that partnership. In terms of finding employment with a criminal record, we agree with the explanation of the Deputy Minister and want to add that we need to remember that there are law-abiding graduates in our community without employment. So that is not only a challenge for people with a criminal record, it's a reality of the country. And what we try offenders to understand, but also what all of us should try to instill in our young people is that not all of us will be able to work for government. It is important for the country that we create a situation where young people are encouraged to start their own business, also ex-offenders. As part of that, we give courses in entrepreneurship to offenders so that upon release, when they have these qualifications, they can also start their own business because government will not be able to provide employment to all of the unemployed people, whether they are ex-offenders or law-abiding young people. The last one that I want to touch on is in terms of the benefits of these programs. Can I continue? I'm not sure if...
Yes. Can I plead with Honorable Mthethwa to mute? Honorable Mthethwa, please mute. Yeah.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you. In terms of the benefits of the programs as a department, we have embarked previously on study tours to other countries. Also invite our counterparts of corrections internationally to come and visit us and to exchange good practices. Our research has shown us that it is important and beneficial for the offenders to receive this training that we're giving them, also educational programs and all the other programs and services that we are offering. All of that is based on research, showing that when you put a lot of human beings and warehouse them without providing any services, they are then released from those facilities even worse than when they came in. The reality that all of us as South Africans must accept is that the majority of offenders will return to our neighborhoods. It is therefore in the interest of all of us to make sure that these people who have wronged the community do not go out and commit the same crimes. Our attempt as correctional services and government is to provide them opportunities that some of them have not had because of the difficult past that we have, that we had as a country. Some of them just did not have the opportunities. As government, we are now spending taxpayers' money to skill them in order to prevent further crime. So yes, the question, if it's beneficial, it is. And we do have a lot of good stories that we will also share with the committee. We have a branch, social reintegration, that deals with community corrections and reintegration of our offenders. We have very good stories of offenders who started businesses and also provide employment. We would be happy to share that with the committee, together with the work that we do in all other provinces and the different correctional centers. Thank you. I think I will pause there.
Thank you very much, Ms. Blackley. Can I then go back to honorable members and check if there are any follow-up questions? I'm asking this because I saw Kenim Sama, Honorable Kenim Sama's hand up again. And Honorable Dodobo, I'm not sure whether they were raised then or else it's new hands. Can I check with the two honorable members?
Thanks, Chairperson. My hand is up.
Your hand was up?
Yes.
Okay.
I would just want to ask the Honorable Minister that we want to visit if a correctional service and see if there is true there is rehabilitation within the centers. Because I have doubt so that most of inmates, they go out and they come back. And he argued next to King gets on the bush and the tissue or something. So I want we must go there. We must make an oversight visit. Really shaking Lady Changana Taylor.
Okay. Honorable Dodo, is your hand up?
No, not Chair, I'm okay. Stop up.
No, you are okay. Okay. Can I then give over to Honorable GM Olomisa?
Of course, the Chairperson would welcome a visit to any of our centers by members of the committee, including the committee, as a committee. We most welcome that. We want the support that we can get from you. If there are shortcomings that are seen in the manner in which we do our work, we'd like them to be pointed out so that we do better. Thank you.
Thank you very much to both DM for the presentation as well as responding to the questions that we have asked as honorable members. And I must say to the Deputy Minister, we are taking seriously the work that you are doing, and we as NCOP, one of our responsibilities is to make sure that we help where we can. For instance, we've identified the issue of the NPA as a matter that we need to take it up, whether with them or else with the department, that a treasury department. And we see that, honestly, they do not get any cut because it seems that that particular section is suffering severely, the NPA. So we need to look at that. And on the side of the correctional services, as of now, we're quite happy with the work that the department is doing. And now you responded to our questions as NCOP. The only thing that is left from our side is to go to the centers. It's true that we need not to ask any permission from any ministry to go and visit centers of the department. So we need to just, when we do our oversight, it form part of our work to go and do your oversight to those centers and see if there are really problems that are there or else the work that you are doing is beginning to bear fruit. You know, we're looking also on this thing of the issue of inmates that when they get out of jail, they are unable to get jobs. It's true that the issue of unemployment is there, but at the same time, I think the issue of expanding of the records of the department after e-application by the applicants, it's 10 years. I think the 10 years is too much. But again, it ball is on our court to see what do we do in terms of that. I'm not putting the ball in your court. I'm just raising it as an issue that we need to look at. On that point, thank you very much, Honorable Deputy Minister, as well as the department, as the departmental officials. We can then excuse you.
Thanks very much, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you.
Bye.
Can we then?